Hello, this is Guillermo del Toro, and you're listening to Out Now Podcast. Hello.
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and Abe is not here. This is a special bonus episode of the podcast where we usually talk about movies, but this week we're talking about Comic-Con. It is a recap episode, which I did inform you guys that was going to happen, and now it's happening. Abe doesn't go to Comic-Con because he's lame, and he lives in Northern California. One of those things makes more sense than the other. But with me today, I do have, formerly from Just Seen It, now with Rant Hollywood, it is Brenna Smith.
Hi. You'll have to pardon me because I've caught con plague. It's my proof that I was there.
It affects one out of three Comic-Con participants, I assume.
At least. It is. I mean, I'm not sure where I got it from, but it's quite prevalent. It's, you know, handling money, handling toys, bumping into people. You're going to get sick, or somebody you know is going to get sick if you go to COD.
I've escaped unscathed, so I don't know what I did right.
I'm going to cough on you.
It might have been the plastic gloves I was wearing everywhere and the masks, but yes, that's right. I had masks. It was Jim Carrey's The Mask. It was a weird cosplay choice, but I went for it anyway. None of that's true, but did go to Comic-Con the whole week, both of us, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. We did different things.
Wednesday to Sunday.
I did a lot of Hall H stuff. You did a lot of more press interview stuff, correct?
Yeah, which is a sign of Comic-Con I'd never seen before. I've been going to Comic-Con for the last, 7 years. What's the word? Consecutively. Except for 2 years ago. Which was actually Matt Smith's last year as a doctor, and I missed that. So it was, the one con I really cared about, and I couldn't go because I was in England.
He was at Comic-Con plenty this year. He was in Hall H.
He was also charging $40 an autograph, which is sad because last year he was charging $100. So, you know. Demand's dropping.
Well, after Terminator, I mean, it didn't help him, so he's like, I might as well get a discount.
Yeah. I was mostly in the Hilton, actually not on the floor, because that's where all the press events were, which was very nice, because they had coffee and water and balconies to lounge on while you waited for your next interview.
Well, cool. All right, I guess we're just going to go straight into Comic-Con stuff. I mean, for listeners of the podcast, yes, next week is our 200th episode, and Abe and I will be back to do, you know, the regular episode there and whatever special stuff we have in store. We're not going to really focus on any of the regular segments because this is just a bonus recap episode of Comic-Con. That said, for those really wanting to know the out-and-out take on Minions, I did not like it. You saw Minions. Did you like it?
I am a huge Minions fan. I always have to start off saying that I loved the first Despicable Me. I was unhappy with the second Despicable Me, but I enjoyed the Minions in it. The Minions movie was not very good.
So between the two of us, me who does not like Minions and you who loves Minions, neither of us like this movie.
Yeah, I just say go back and watch Despicable Me again because there's too many tired British jokes that are not funny. They're like the first time they have a Bobby drinking tea, like ah ha ha. But the 100th time they have somebody drinking tea while doing something crazy, it's not funny. And you know, having somebody fist fight the Queen is also kind of disrespectful. But you know, but they're yellow and they're cute and it feels like a marketing gimmick. Like I totally fall for it. I buy Minions.
That's how I felt in the first Despicable Me. And lo and behold, now they have their own movie.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've always felt that they were a marketing gimmick, but I don't mind it if it's something I enjoy. Mm-hmm. But this one felt like a marketing gimmick. It felt like a commercial. And like, if you're gonna give me a commercial, give me like Super Bowl quality commercials. Give me something good. And it was not.
Well, now it's made $115 million, so expect Minions 2, still minioning in, you know, fall of 2018 after Despicable Me 3, and, you know, the hybrid crossover of the Penguins of Madagascar meet the Minions.
How spoilery can I get about Minions?
What is there to spoil?
Well, I mean, they confirmed that a certain character wouldn't be in it.
Yeah, okay. Well, yes, it is a prequel, and yes, there's, you know, gives you that setup for, hey, there's this guy who they might be involved.
That's the movie I wanted. That's what I wanted Despicable Me to be.
Well, that's what Minions 2 will be.
Hopefully. And then it will probably be a much better movie because the last 5 minutes in the credits rolling, while the credits were rolling, was better than the entire film.
That was fun, and I mean, why are we talking about Minions too much? I did like the the beginning evolution of them.
One that was in all the trailers and we'd already seen.
Yeah, exactly. So. But yeah, anyway, Minions.
Comic-Con.
Yeah, back to Comic-Con. Okay.
I saw a Minion cosplay.
I saw a few Minion cosplays and some Minion. Did you see the Lego Minions?
I did. And then I saw people just wearing overalls and yellow shirts, and I saw people in, like, mascot version of Minion costumes.
Yeah, every third person was a Wario, and every other people was a Minion.
Yeah, what really was up with that? There were so many
Wario hats.
Mario, Luigi cosplays. I saw a really good Rainbow Road Mario and Luigi, though. But, yeah, it was just, maybe they're easy to do. If you got a mustache and some, you know, overalls.
Now, mustaches are popular between Hateful Eight and Mario. That's what I've learned. I didn't get too much of a chance to kind of explore the cosplay field and the floor and see all the clever costumes and whatnot. But I did get a chance to walk the floor and see some things. I saw, like, they're still doing Taffeta. Or, what's the name? Taffeta? That's the back part. From Wreck-It Ralph, Sarah Silverman's character. It's like Vanellope.
Vanellope von Schweetz.
Von Schweetz, yeah.
A lot of hers.
She did, like, with her in, like, the cart and everything.
With
which
babies
is pretty clever,
in the cart, though.
Yeah.
It was really cute. And then Wreck-It Ralph is the dad.
Yeah.
When I wasn't doing press events, I was on the floor, so I was grateful to see a lot of that. I don't really go to any events on the floor because they're just a cluster.
Mm-hmm.
They're horrible. And, you know, they're not usually fun, and the things they give away are crap. But I do like to walk and see what's for sale and what the different vendors are showcasing. So, like, we get sneak peeks at the Weta booth had the new Krampus for the movie that's coming out this year. And that kind of stuff was all around the floor.
Yeah, we'll get to I saw the Krampus preview at Hall H, but we'll get to the Hall H show soon.
Did you go to preview night?
I did go to preview night. Didn't really preview that much. Just kind of got a feel for the floor. Just saw basically saw where things were. So on Sunday, when I did get a chance to walk around and buy stuff and do more picture stuff, I just already know where to go in terms of, like, the Legendary booth, the Warner Brothers booth, and things like that. Did get some see some cool stuff. I mean, like, the Warner Brothers booth is always pretty fun, where they have, like, all the costumes, and same with, like, the DC booth. It's like a combination of seeing all the Superman and Batman costumes, and they had, like, a big Iron Giant statue.
Yeah, and then the new Superman killer suit was on display, which was epic and huge. And, I mean, we saw the pictures of Ben Affleck, who'd gotten totally ripped, and you're like, wow, he's big, but you see his costume.
He
didn't even realize how big he actually is.
Yeah, it makes up for how sad he is.
Exactly.
I'll get to that too. But watching Ben Affleck sit on a panel where he's supposed to be all, you know, excited about Superman, he looked really sad.
Well, you know, he might be going through some things at home.
Yeah, obviously.
The last thing he wants to do is probably PR. But maybe he's just getting into character. I mean, Batman lost his family. Ben Affleck lost his wife.
But well, did you get to watch the Batman Superman trailer?
I haven't actually watched any of the exclusive.
Didn't watch any of the trailers. It took me a while to get to some of the stuff, just because I was trying to, you know, report things and watch things. I couldn't, I'm huge on Ash vs. the Evil Dead. I'm super looking forward to that. I couldn't watch it for, like, a whole day, which was killing me. I couldn't wait to see new Bruce Campbell, Sam Raimi, Evil Dead action. Then I did watch it, and it's fantastic.
Today is my day for decompressing and watching all the exclusives. Did you see the leaked Deadpool trailer?
I was at the Deadpool panel.
And that looks pretty incredible. Seems like they got it spot on, and that was probably the most R-rated trailer I've ever seen.
Yeah, definitely wants to show you that it's not beating around the bush in terms of Deadpool. That was a fun. I mean, it's I'm trying not to, like, jump too out of order, but, like, in terms of things that were happening.
Should we go day by day?
Well, let's do it. Okay, so, like, preview night happened. Did you do anything special on preview night?
Well, preview night for me is always the night I go around and try and get any exclusives I want, because after preview night, they're not impossible to get. Mostly because the big ones, like Hasbro, Hasbro is the worst one on the floor, is because they do a ticket system to be able to buy anything from them. And you had to show up really early at 6 a.m., wait in line to maybe get a ticket, which then you can get in line. So if you want anything Hasbro, you got to do it preview night. Otherwise, you're just not going to get it all weekend.
They had some cool stuff. They had, like, I think the biggest thing. Well, there's two big things. One was the Ant-Man figure.
Yeah, which was awesome. Oh, I got one.
You did get one? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is cheap, so that helps too. That's why everyone wants something like that. The other is they have this Black Series for Star Wars.
Yeah.
Which is just black characters from Star. That's not true. But it's just Lando and John Boyega figures. That's it.
Yeah.
And Chewbacca. In the Star Wars universe, Wookiees are basically black characters. They're awesome, like, figures that kind of come. But for this one, they had the New Order Stormtrooper. So that was the big deal for Hasbro as far as Star Wars figures go.
And the Magic the Gathering cards are always a big draw for people who are into that.
Not my crowd, but yes, certainly popular.
Yeah. And also My Little Pony. They had a My Little Pony exclusive that sold very well also. But all I got from Hasbro was the Ant-Man figure. That's all I wanted. It was $10. I mean, it comes in a matchbox. It's the cutest thing. It comes up, you know, it's got a tiny clamshell case. it's a miniature figure, and it's a very good idea. Actually, when I interviewed, I'm jumping out and ordering him. But when I interviewed Corey Stoll, somebody had brought him one. I was like, you waited in that Hasbro line to give it away to the guy who doesn't even play Ant-Man. He plays Yellow Jacket.
Yeah, to remind him that he's the bad guy.
That's true. But yeah, so preview night, I got that. And my big goes for Comic-Con are maybe Hasbro, depending on what exclusives they have. Mondo, definitely, because I'm a big fan of their posters and their vinyls. And
Mondo had some cool stuff. Mondo, their first big reveal. Well, they had a few big reveals. They also have LPs, and so
we explain what Mondo is? Do people know what Mondo
sure,
is?
Sure, go on.
Mondo is this tiny poster company that started off in Texas, hiring local artists to make posters for films that they would screen. So if they screened a classic film like Aliens, they would hire an artist to make a poster for Aliens. And eventually they started selling, and then they started becoming valuable, and then they started doing releases. And now they are like, they make editions of 175, they sell out in 5 minutes online, and every year at Comic-Con they bring a couple exclusives to sell at their booths as well. They're very valuable collector's items.
Well, there you go. And so, yes, they always debut a few new items this year. So they had some LPs. One was for the Superman. Like, last year they had Batman, the animated series.
I got
like,
all those.
The LP for that, which then they have, like, special, like, LP covers for them. And so, you know, obviously you want to collect those. But all the actual LP was just the theme from that, from mm-hmm. the animated series. This year they had the Superman version.
Mm-hmm.
So they had the Superman
LP. Shaped like his...
His red S.
His logo.
Yeah.
His chest. And they had a Kryptonite version. They had a Kryptonite variant that was green and yellow instead of red and yellow.
Very cool.
They had the Aliens mm-hmm. Soundtrack on vinyl, which had two different color variations.
And the Last of Us soundtrack
yeah.
as well.
I don't think that was actually on sale. I think that was just on display. It's going to come out later.
Okay. I know they're showing a lot because they had like all their steelbooks. They weren't selling any of those.
I know.
Either, but,
like,
they showed
I want them.
Them. And then, of course, they have the posters. One was the big Jaws poster. I believe it was the first one they revealed.
Yeah, it was the first day.
And they revealed there's an Escape from New York one. Mm-hmm. There was an Ant-Man one that was kind of like
Ant-Man foil variant.
Yeah, it had like a sheen, like
yeah.
holographic kind of look
it
to it.
It was an $85 poster,
mm-hmm.
which I did not get. They had an Aliens poster to go with the soundtrack, same image.
Mm-hmm.
They had a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles poster. They had an Age of Ultron poster that they revealed
yes.
there.
Yeah.
And then my favorite, the last one, I got this one on the last day, was the Crimson Peak posters.
Yeah, the Crimson Peak posters.
Gorgeous.
They were quite cool. And they also, they had an Iron Giant Bolt.
They've been trying to sell that for like a year or so now. Nobody wants to buy them.
It was sold out when it was there.
Really? They yeah. finally sold out? Because they had those. That was an exclusive last year.
Mm-hmm.
They finally sold out of their giant $70 Bolt replicas that light up. But yeah, so that was my big stop for preview night, and that was pretty much it as far as exclusives went. I never go to Funko. Funko is just as bad as Hasbro.
I did Funko last year, and I managed to get in early last year, so even then I still had to wait in line like
yeah.
a longer line. Like
I mean, that line caps the moment before the doors
yeah.
are even open.
Funko is very similar to Mondo, except it's instead of posters, it's toys,
mm-hmm.
and not even necessarily. It's not even really toys; it's just figures. It's
yeah,
not
those,
they, like they don't really bend or anything.
You
it's
know
like,
those pop figures that everybody.
It's the pop
gets.
Figures, and it's also like kind of. They have like I think there's like a Japanese company that's also with them that they also have like more exclusives.
Yeah,
that you just
they had
can't
a Deadpool bobblehead. Oh, and then I went to Gentle Giant and I got the giant Deadpool figure that comes in like a 3 foot tall clamshell.
So like the big
packaging.
Things. Yeah. So yeah, I just basically walked around, took pictures and stuff. I didn't really buy anything.
Planned
on
your route
PDI.
For Sunday.
Pretty much.
And there were no press events on Wednesday night.
Yeah, it was Wednesday. They I didn't go to any of the screenings, but they had a lot of screenings for the CW shows
mm-hmm.
That were like and CBS, just DC show, like because Supergirls at CBS. So
yeah.
they screened that one, which I've heard mixed things, and I know it's been on leaked online, so people have been watching it. Also, I've yet to check it out. I don't watch CBS because it makes my life easier by not watching a whole channel.
Yeah,
and
just cut it out entirely.
Exactly.
I only got one channel I watch. It makes my life so much easier.
FX Now.
HBO.
Okay.
So Thursday.
Thursday.
Thursday I had... Oh, who did I have on Thursday? Well, you go first.
Thursday I was in Hall H for the first day. And I did wait on Wednesday to get my wrist. So this year, last year they had wristbands to get into Hall H. This year they have the same wristband plan where basically you wait to get a wristband and that ensures that you get into Hall H, which of course has holds 6,500 people or something like that. So this year they had a bit of a different system. Last year you had to kind of get the wristband and then wait in line the entire time. this year you could get a wristband, then leave, then come back in the morning, which makes a lot of sense.
So people aren't camping out anymore.
But people are still camping out. I get the logic of I want to sit close and see my favorite people kind of thing. It just doesn't do anything for me. I mean, I have a wristband that means I get to get in. You can see what you need to see from anywhere in that building because they have these giant HD screens.
Even if you're in the front row, you're watching the screen because you can see the details on their face. It doesn't matter how far away you are. Chances are...
I get the joy of, like, I'm right there next to Henry Cavill, but at the same time, it's like, he's not going to, like, high-five you and take you to the club later. Like, you're just going to, like, see him, then he's going to walk away and never acknowledge your presence. But regardless, people camped out. I'm glad for them that they enjoyed what they got to do by sitting closer than anyone else that had a wristband and just walked in because they didn't just walk in. You had to wait in a giant line anyway, but you still eventually get in before everything starts because you have a wristband. Mm-hmm. Regardless, what happened on Thursday? Thursday began with something that I cannot recall right now. What is the first thing that happened on Thursday? Thursday had the Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2. That was the second thing, but I can't remember the first thing yet, so I'll get to that later. Yeah, the Hunger Games panel was, of course, the final Hunger Games movie. Jennifer Lawrence and the entire gang were there to show off a brand new trailer and basically just have panel fun. There wasn't too much to glean in terms of what you want to get from a Hunger Games panel because you already know these Hunger Games movies and you know what to expect if you've read the books, or if you don't, you just know that, hey, look, it's Jennifer Lawrence, Liam Hemsworth, and Josh Hutcherson having fun on stage. And Jennifer Lawrence is bumbling over words because she is adorable because she does that kind of thing.
Who I ran into on her way back to the green room after that panel. She's very skinny.
Mm-hmm. I remember the first thing now. It's actually amazing, and I feel bad that I forgot. There's a lot of, guys, there's a lot of things that happened at Comic-Con. Can't keep track of every amazing thing that happened. Bill Murray came out. That was the first thing that happened at Comic-Con at Hall H on Thursday. Weird.
What a way to start your con.
Yeah, the first panel was called the Open Road panel. We didn't know what that was going to be. Open Road is, you know, it's a random studio. It's not, like, doesn't have giant superheroes or whatever, so you can't really predict it. I was hoping for The Gray 2 with Liam Neeson, but that didn't happen. Instead, we got a big preview for the Rock the Casbah movie. That's the new film from... stars Bill Murray, is directed by Barry Levinson, and after they played the trailer for that, and everyone's like, hey, that's that trailer that we saw featuring Bill Murray, it's a movie that's not super geek-centric, Bill Murray then walked onto the floor singing Smoke on the Water, because that's the kind of thing Bill Murray does.
Bill Murray.
Walks up on the stage, and we proceed to get a whole, like, hour discussion with Bill Murray and the writer of the film, Mitch Glazer, I believe is his name, as they just take questions from the crowd and everybody, and it's just, I mean... It's Bill Murray, so it's just fun. It was just fun to be a part of. After that, then the Hunger Games panel happened. Hunger Games Act panels actually started pretty cool. It had this kind of drum procession happen. People on stage came out with drums, and people in the crowd came out with drums dressed as, like, rebels, like the rebels in the district in whites and everything, and they just start beating the drums. And they play, like, a special video message on screen of the same drum thing happening, but now Jennifer Lawrence is walking up in this, like, red Mockingjay outfit, just, like, alerting us that, like, it's, you know... The Mockingjay's here. Then the whole panel came out and everything. Conan moderated this panel. Conan O'Brien, who was, you know, here all, we were down in San Diego all week, filming a show all week and being very involved in Comic-Con. He moderated the panel, making it one of the best moderated panels ever. That's not hosted by Chris Hardwick, who is, you know, panel god for Comic-Con, apparently, because they want to put him in everything. But yeah, he had a lot of fun talking to the crowd and everything. Then they premiered a new trailer, which I believe I mentioned already, but it was a new trailer. It's probably going to debut a month or so from now. But yeah, it's big excitement. I mean, fans of the Hunger Games should be excited that this is, you know, the last chapter. So there's going to be plenty of action and, you know, fitting finales for all these characters and whatnot that they've been waiting for. And yeah, so that was that. After that panel, I left Hall H. I didn't need to see. I know the Doctor Who panel was in there, but I'm not a Whoer.
Mm-hmm. What are you? Whovian.
Whovian? Mm-hmm. Sounds like a Seuss character.
I'm a Whovian.
Yeah, Horton here is a Whovian.
Yes.
Is
that, I was trying to think of something clever and Susie and I could say about being a Whovian, but I couldn't because I've got a head cold.
Okay. Well, regardless, I left the panel. I know that happened later on in the day. There was something in between that I know. I think it's a show, but I can't think of it. Regardless, I needed to get out of there because I needed to wait in line for Friday because Friday was going to have some big stuff in there and you had to get in line to get the wristband to get into Friday to begin with.
Because that's how horrible Hall H is.
Yeah, definitely Line Con was as big as Comic Con this year.
My Thursday was a little less exciting. I started the morning by going over to the giant Snoopy doghouse they had over in the parking lot near Petco Park, where they were doing promotion for the Peanuts movie.
I didn't get a chance to make it over there.
There was a lot of cool stuff over there. I got a Charlie Brown hat. It's got the symbol on his shirt. So it's a ugly yellow hat, but it's got the Charlie Brown symbol.
I just kept seeing those hats everywhere. Yeah. I think this is the first time I haven't gone over to that Pavilion area. Like, that usually has some cool stuff over there.
Oh, there was a lot of giveaways.
Yeah.
And then, when I went over there, I interviewed the adorable little Disney alum who's going to be playing the little redheaded girl.
Okay.
Who looks exactly like the little redheaded girl. Mm. She's got these long, gorgeous curls. She's very sweet, very mature, and gave a very good interview. That should be up sometime today.
Over on Rant Hollywood.
For Rant Hollywood.
Yeah.
And she was excited to be a part of the picture. Apparently she went in to audition for Lucy. They took one look at her and said, little redheaded girl.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually also the first movie where the little redheaded girl actually talks. She's never talked before. So
finally.
That should be fun. Finally. We've always wondered what she had to say instead of just being an object of affection. And then after that,
I'm excited for the Peanuts movie, by the way.
I am too.
I think every preview I've seen, it just like looked like it, even though it's a CG animated movie, it looks like it's really trying to evoke the style of Schultz's artwork in those comics.
Yeah, particularly working with her, talking with her, made me even more excited because she is such a gem, particularly for being 11. Like, I've had worse interviews with people who were three times her age. And then after that, I went to the Scooby-Doo and Kiss panel.
Oh, good.
Because everybody's really excited about
that. I
was
waiting in line, but I kept joking about how much I'm missing seeing Scooby-Doo and Kiss, which I assume is a Versus film.
Actually, there was no line for Hall H for Scooby-Doo and Kiss.
Of course not.
I walked by and they were like, anybody want to come into Hall H? It's Scooby-Doo and Kiss, which I've never seen
before. Well, even Hunger Games, like, you could just walk in there. Like, I think what's neat and interesting and annoying about the wristbands is that they know what they're doing in terms of doing that. By having a wristband system in place, it kind of freaks people out. So there are people that are going to wait there very early. There's some people that are going to join later on. There's people that are going to see a giant line and think, I don't want to go there. It's already filled.
Yeah.
6,500 people is a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
And, for example, Saturday, the biggest day in Hall H, people waited out for, like, days to get a wristband to go in there. People waited all night to get, and the wristband handing out system takes a long time because they have to walk down an entire line and give away these wristbands. That said, you could have got there Saturday morning and still got a wristband. Like, it seems like a long line, but
people want to be sure. They want to be 100% sure that they're going
to
get it.
Yeah, so obviously, yes, if you want to be ensured, you want to get there the night before, but you could have easily got there and still got a wristband and still got in, like, which is a shame for some people that wasted their day, didn't get any sleep, and are now, like, hazily sitting through a Hall H panel that they're still excited about seeing.
So Scooby-Doo and Kiss was mostly fun. Matthew Lillard and the chick who plays Abby in NCIS and the chick who voices Daphne and pretty much every female voice. She also does Vicky in the Fairly Odd Parents and Mandy in Billy and Mandy. So she's a very prolific voice actress whose name I can't remember because I'm a horrible person. They were wonderful.
So Lillard's still doing Shaggy?
He is. He wasn't still doing Shaggy. He came back after the previous Shaggy decided he didn't want to do it anymore.
Okay.
And they asked him, and he said, I won't do it while he still wants to do it because he's a respectful actor.
Mm-hmm.
So he jumped in now.
I'm glad everyone's getting the scoop on the Kiss for Scooby-Doo.
Oh, yeah, totally. I know, it's really important.
Yeah.
And then Kiss walked down the press line, and Gene Simmons looked me up and down and said, can I have some milk?
Okay.
For those of you who are unaware, I am a woman who has breasts.
Yes.
And they were they were there, and I imagine that's what he was referring to. And it was kind of vulgar. But thankfully, the woman next to me got that on video, so that will be online soon, too.
Oh, great.
So you can see what a jerk he is.
Mm-hmm.
But because I was there, I didn't make it to the Drunk History panel. After that, I was supposed to go to. But I did make it to another period, the new Comedy Central show.
Yeah, it's a reality series that's set in
1902.
Yeah. Which stars Ricky Lindholm from Garfunkel & Oates and what's her name? The other comedian.
They both wrote it too.
Yeah, they both wrote it together. What's her name?
Ricky. I've got it.
Ricky Lindholm and.
Yeah. And also, Michael Ian Black was there.
She does a lot of roasts.
She does. Central. But it was great to be in the room with them and talk to them about the show they're doing and how important it is and how far Comedy Central has come. Since the days of the Man Show, so many like female hosted events that they have going on. So that was very cool. Natasha
Leggero. There we go. Thank jeez, that was gonna bug me for a while.
And Michael Ian Black was there, who's I've been a fan of ever since those VH1 I Love the 90s series, because I had nothing to do in my evenings.
I know from the state, all those guys.
Oh yeah,
it's way back.
That was very fun. They were very very talkative, and of course they were funny. I don't think I got a single serious answer out of Michael Ian Black. Mm-hmm. I think the entire thing was just sarcastic replies, which is awesome. And then after that, I went and walked the floor some.
Okay.
So that was the end of my Thursday.
That was Thursday. Okay, my Thursday consisted of a lot of waiting.
In line.
I eventually did get a chance to, there was a lot of us together in line to kind of, so we could take shifts going back and forth. So I did eventually get to leave, take a shift off, go back to the hostel I was staying in and write up some articles.
See how hardcore you have to be to go to Comic-Con? You have to take shifts for the watch to get things in line. When people complain about the lines and Hall H and all that there, it's not exaggeration. It is pretty awful.
Yeah, line con. But yeah, eventually did get our wristbands later that night and everything, and went away from that, and then woke up early to come back in the morning to get in the line. Basically, you get a wristband that gets you access to another line, and then you wait in that line again, Hall H. So proceeded to do that. Now
it's the same thing with buying exclusives, Comic-Con exclusives on the floor.
So now it's Friday. Friday at Comic-Con. So for me, it was Hall H for a majority of the day. Mm-hmm. I was going to be in Hall H from when it started to when it ended. And the end is, the end's going to get pretty spectacular. But the beginning was no slouchy. The beginning even before the big stuff, they actually played this thing called the Animation Show of Shows, which is this, short animated film festival that they tour around the country, and they bring it to Comic-Con every so often as well. So this is the 16th annual Animation Show of Shows, which was 8 short films. They're all quite good. One of them was Feast, the Oscar-winning Disney film. That was the first one they showed. I need to go through all of these, but they showed another one that was nominated, Me and My Molten, that was an Oscar nominee. They showed this one about these two Russian cosmonauts, which was easily the best one that I saw there. It was very emotional, very touching, very well done, about these best friends that are training together to be cosmonauts, and something happens, and it's just a really, really good, animated short film.
Gravity?
there's things involving gravity. But no, it's not a riff on gravity, but it was very clever. There's also the two debuts. Like, most of these have been touring countries or touring already in various festivals and what have you. But there's two new ones. One was called Love in the Time of March Madness, which is about this female basketball player who's like 6'4". And it's like, basically, it seemed like an autobiographical animated short about her dealing with how tall she is and the kind of comments she receives and whatnot, both in her professional and romantic career, life, what have you. And then the other one was a Bill Plimpton cartoon. Bill Plimpton is a very well-known animator, and he had a new short animated film called The Loneliest Stoplight, which was narrated by Patton Oswalt. basically, he voices a stoplight that gets very little traffic because it's in a lonely part of the road, hence The Loneliest Stoplight. Very fun short. A lot of fun shorts. It was just a cool way to start, it seemed like they wanted to get everyone in, so they kind of had this going at the same time to kind of hush everybody up while it was happening. So once that was going on, a lot of cool stuff, a lot of cool animation, whatnot. Then the panels everyone wanted to see started. So first up was the Walking Dead panel. Mm-hmm. Walking Dead. This is the first time I've been to a Walking Dead panel since the debut of the Walking Dead, because it got insanely popular. And the first time it was there, it was in it wasn't Ballroom 20. It was with one of 6 BDCF.
Yeah, one of the small ones.
Yeah, so there's a number of rooms in Comic-Con besides Hall H, obviously, where all the other panels happen. Ballroom 20 is like the second biggest room.
Ballroom 20 is, it's usually Hall H's movies, Ballroom 20 is TV, but sometimes if something is so big, it transcends Ballroom 20 and moves to Hall H.
Yeah, and then there's even smaller ones, 6 BDCF, 24 AB or something like
Indigo
that.
Indigo Ballroom.
Indigo Ballroom's another one, yeah. But yeah, so back in my day, 6 years ago, before The Walking Dead started, when I was just a big fan of the comic, and it's like, what, they're making a show? Cool. I went to that panel. This was before I was even pressed. Went to that panel. I was like, hey, wow, I just saw the premiere of The Walking Dead for the first time. Now it's like one of the biggest things at Comic-Con.
Everybody.
They literally deck out Petco Park to be this zombie obstacle course that you can run through, because that's how big Walking Dead is. So, got into my first Walking Dead panel in 6 years. And they debuted the new trailer, which is online now. I put it up on Rand Hollywood. And yeah, the trailer's fun, you can check that out. But they also had, the whole cast came out, and everyone loved seeing the cast, especially Norman Reedus.
Because he's pretty. I'm quoting what the audience said.
That was a whole lot of fun. Hardwick's there, of course, Chris Hardwick, because he hosts Talking Dead, so why wouldn't he be there? So that was cool. What was cooler was Fear of the Walking Dead came out. Mm-hmm. So this is the upcoming spinoff of The Walking Dead, which begins this August, late August.
They also had their own little obstacle course, not obstacle course, but
like a little
club thing
outside of the hall. Yeah, I get the visit.
See, if you don't get tickets for Comic-Con, if you go to downtown San Diego, it's almost as cool, because the entirety of downtown San Diego gets decked out with promotional stuff for all these shows and movies. So there was The Walking Dead
at Petco Park.
Then there was the MTV fan what do they call it? The fan awards, whatever.
Yeah.
And then there was Assassin's Creed Jungle Gym thing.
Assassin's Creed has it. Yeah, it's like a parkour obstacle course, yeah. Which I imagine is a huge long line because you can only do like so many people at a time on that thing. But it looks like something I definitely want to do that.
All the bars getting decked out.
Adult Swim
at
a carnival.
Yeah. So there's plenty to do in San Diego if you don't go into the con.
For sure.
You won't be disappointed.
Yeah. You might be disappointed that you can't walk around very easily, but there's still stuff to do.
You'll get the experience of walking through crowds of thousands of sweaty people.
You'll feel like The Walking Dead. So the Fear of the Walking Dead panel happened, and that was cool because that's online too now, the first trailer for that. But I mean, we'd seen brief clips of things and just heard details, but you haven't really seen what it is, even though you get a sense. So now that I have like a better sense of what it's gonna look like and whatnot, it stars some cool people. Like Cliff Curtis is in there, Kim Dickens are in there. They're great like character actors that do a good job all the time. They're the leads.
Mm-hmm.
Ruben Blades is in there. Ruben Blades is in there, which I enjoy seeing because he's just like a musician who happens to do genre things every now and then, like Predator 2. So it's like, oh, Ruben Blades is in this. Great. It looks fine. Like I'm happy to see something different in that. If they're going to make something in that universe, I'm glad that it looks about as different as it can in terms of being in an urban setting and set in a period when zombies were first happening and what have you. So I'm curious to see how that goes. And I mean, any Walking Dead fan should be excited because you know you have, I believe it's a 6-episode season that leads right into the next season of The Walking Dead. So basically, fans are going to get like 14 consecutive weeks of new Walking Dead footage.
It's like there's no off season for Walking Dead.
Yeah. So that happened. Following the Walking Dead panel, the Walking Dead panels, they had the Game of Thrones panel.
Yay!
Of course.
And this was the day that Walking Dead and Conan were on... Walking Dead and Game of Thrones were on Conan that evening.
I like they call him Conan.
Conan.
Yeah. The Game of Thrones panel happened. Not much to say about it. Like, this is the kind of thing that... Not bugs me, but it's like...
None of the big stars were there.
I mean, it generally seems to be like the stars that aren't currently filming the next season of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And because they're currently filming the next season of Game of Thrones, they don't have anything new to show.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happened. You got, you had...
Alfie Allen,
the Sansa Stark.
Sophie Turner.
The guy who plays Varys.
He was there.
He was there. He basically was the kind of the pink Peter Dinklage sub because they both have a very eloquent way of speaking and are very entertaining to listen to.
Mm-hmm. Gwendolyn Christie.
Gwendolyn Christie was there, who maybe one of the people that won con in terms of like celebrities that appeared on multiple panels and everyone was giving praise to them because she was there. She was at Star Wars. She was all over. She was at the Women Who Kick Ass panel.
She was also 10 feet tall.
She's also 10 feet tall. That helps without heels. And
Davos Seaworth was there. Maisie Williams, Arya Stark was there.
Sam Tully.
No, of course. Have you ever seen him shaved?
Like, without a
without
beard?
Without the beard.
Yeah, that's what he was doing that on the panel.
The best thing.
And the Gilly, the actress who plays Gilly.
Oh, yeah, she's cute.
Yeah.
So nobody, no main characters, no Daenerys, no Jon, no...
Because they're all filming, they're all doing their thing.
Well, I thought Jon Snow wasn't coming back.
We'll see. But yeah, there's nothing really to glean from either. They showed, the thing that they showed, and Natalie Dormer was there too.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that they showed that was the highlight they showed a gag reel.
Oh, Melisandre.
Melisandre was there, yes. And then they showed an audition reel, which was pretty cool. Like, they showed these auditions for all the different actors that were auditioning to be on the show, which has gone online as well. I also posted that on Rant Hollywood.
So it's the DVD extras, but
basically. With them there. Which is what has been in the past. I remember I was at a Game of Thrones panel before, and they showed, like, a deleted scene from season 3 or something like that. So it's like, you know, that, like, it's more, it's fun to, I mean, I guess... It comes from being press, where it's like, I want to be able to write about something for Game of Thrones, but there's nothing really there except, like, here's a video that you can watch now.
Yeah.
So there's no, like, there was no new casting announcements, which generally do happen. So that was
they usually have something.
A casting announcement, but that didn't have to take place. There's nothing given away about the next season, because they can't do any of that. Say, especially now, because it's caught up with the books, so you really can't do any of that.
Yeah.
George R. R. Martin doesn't show up, because he can't fit on the chairs. But... Sorry, George R. Martin fans. I'm joshing. It's fun to listen to them. Like, they have fun things to say. They're interacting and what have you.
It's like DVD commentary. It's fun to listen to. Yeah, it's just nothing new.
Yeah, just nothing to really glean from that. What happened after the Game of Thrones panel So on Saturday, there's a panel called The Women Who Kick Ass. On Friday, there's this panel that's focused on some male actors that are in various genre shows. And I believe that was the next thing that came out early. In Hall H, yes. Where it basically feels like a time where if you want to go get snacks and go to the bathroom, there's what you do. But they had various actors from Outlander, The Strain, Kevin Durant from The Strain. No, just a number of actors all talking about just being
men.
Being men on various TV shows that are very, very popular and what have you.
Yeah.
And I'll dive into Star Wars right now. Star Wars was like the big thing that everyone wanted to see on Friday that, you know, besides Game of Thrones and Walking Dead, which were obviously very popular as well, Star Wars was like the huge thing because it was Star Wars. It's the biggest thing in the world. This panel, everyone came out. So yeah, J.J. Abrams, Kathleen Kennedy, and Lawrence Kasdan came out. So that's a good set right there. They came out and they're talking about, you know, the process of making a new Star Wars movie, which you expect, and then they brought out a working puppets alien creature that's going to be in the film, and kind of emphasizing the fact that we're going to have a lot of practical creations in the film and whatnot. And it was walking on stage and everything looked great. After that, the whole new cast came out. So you had Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, Oscar Isaac. On the light side of things, and you had the villains come out. You had Gwendolyn Christie, Adam Driver, and Domhnall Gleeson. And he confirmed, like, he plays General Nux, the leader of the First Order, or at least one of the guys heavily involved in the First Order.
Came over from Mad Max.
He came over from Mad Max. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no. Nux is back.
After he got witnessed.
Now he's a redhead. Following that great group of people, they had Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, and Harrison Ford all came out on the stage, which is pretty exciting. Seeing, you know, the triumvirate of Star Wars arrive on stage to talk about things, pretty exciting stuff. They then proceeded to show this behind-the-scenes clip that was just kind of a sizzle reel of all these little images and videos of them filming the movie. Star Wars, like, everyone's seeing Star Wars. So it's not like they needed to do anything besides just be like, hey, we're making Star Wars, and here we're all here. But they did show this thing, which is pretty cool. They managed to get away with not showing any new footage or trailers, which we already knew we weren't going to get, but, you know, they made it worthwhile anyway, beyond the fact that, you know, they're all there in front of you talking at you about Star Wars. That was just the beginning. towards the end of this very highly entertaining Star Wars panel, J.J. Abrams then proceeded to ask, who likes Star Wars music? The crowd reluctantly said yes, because, you know,
okay.
So then he asked, who would like to see Star Wars music live? That seemed like, yeah, that sounds fun. And we're like, what are you banking on here, JJ? And he said, well, we're going to be taking all of you to a Star Wars concert now. Now, that's a weird thing to comprehend as you're, you know, sitting and thinking about, you know, what you're going to do after Hall H, which is probably just go and wait in line for the next day's panel. But you don't really pass up an opportunity to go to a free Star Wars concert. So after, like, rubbing our eyes and going, huh, in disbelief, we then all stood up, and when I say we all, I mean 6,500 people in Hall H stood up and then proceeded to walk out in a very organized and friendly manner, which was impressive, out onto the street where we were given these lanyards and marched all the way to the San Diego Symphony, which is where we waited around. We got free lightsabers that light up and eventually got to see a live Star Wars concert for free. John Williams was not there, although at that point we were expecting anything could have happened. But he did send in a video opening, you know, saying, hey, Comic-Con, it's me, Johnny Williams, I did Jaws. And
Johnny Williams, is that what his friends call him?
That's his jazz name, his Yaz name. And he introduced the fact that we're going to be seeing an orchestra play some of his favorite tracks from that he's created for Star Wars, and he's going to be conducted by one of his proteges, and that's what happened. Mm-hmm. Imperial March started things off. Of course, you had some classic tracks like Asteroid Fields and Leia's theme and what have you, and then at the very end, Star Wars title plays with a giant fireworks spectacular happening at the same time in the harbor right next to us. It was incredible. Like, you don't, like, it's the kind of thing where you go to Comic-Con for something like this. You can't predict that everyone's going to see a Star Wars concert. You can predict, like, seeing, like, a trailer or something, but that's the kind of thing where it's like, this is incredible, and what did I have to do? I just lined up to see something that I like, and hey, I got rewarded for that. So that was fantastic. Have you found something that is even worth mentioning in Hall H that I skipped over?
For my Friday was far less exciting. I went and interviewed the cast of Archer.
Oh, cool. That's cool.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the lead Archer was not there.
John Benjamin was
there. Yeah, he got stuck at the Bob's Burgers panel.
Oh, well.
Which I guess might have overlapped, and then he just went somewhere else.
Okay.
But everybody else was there, and that was the day I did my Lana cosplay. So I got to interview Aisha Tyler while dressed like Lana, which was fun. She enjoyed my costume. She was very flattering about it. And then after that, I went and did some floor stuff again. And then I went to a special screening of Dude Bro Party Massacre 3.
What? Dude Bro Party Massacre 3?
Yeah.
Had you seen Dude Bro Party Massacre 1 and 2?
You know, you don't need to follow the story.
Oh, good. Okay.
Good. There is no Dude Bro Party Massacre 1 or 2 because this is a film made by the guys who do 5-second films.
Oh, okay.
And it is an homage to 80s, 90s slasher films. So it's, you know, it's putting the hypersexualization on the dude bros, and the murder. So it's a parody and it's hilarious. I recommend you all go see it when it comes out.
Is it a full length feature?
It's a full length feature. It is more than 5 seconds.
Okay, good.
They like how do they advertise it. It's like a 20,000 second film.
Okay.
Or something like that. And the entire cast was there and they did a Q&A afterwards. And if you like 5-second films, or if you like satire or humor, you should definitely see this. They cast the guy from The Room.
Tommy Wiseau?
No, the other guy.
One of the other guys from there? Okay.
The one who was not Tommy Wiseau.
I'd be surprised, actually, if he kind of appeared. Yeah. He only makes art.
That's true. And it's brilliant, and you should definitely check it out when it's available. They funded it via Kickstarter. They've got fantastic cameos. They've got Patton Oswalt, Larry King.
The two greats.
Yeah, you know those famous folks. But yeah, that was my very less eventful Friday. Saturday was more fun. Saturday I had it was more fun than it wasn't fun. Saturday was my day to explore the floor and actually do everything I wanted, because on Thursday, a preview night, it took like an hour and a half to get my badge because the press professional line was insane. So I didn't really get much time on the floor. So Saturday was my day to go and explore the floor.
You got there at the wrong time, apparently. I just kind of walked in and got it.
Yeah, I mean, traffic was awful.
That wouldn't help. Yeah, I was there in the morning.
Yeah, would have been great, but I didn't have the chance. Mm-hmm. So Friday was my day to walk around. Saturday, however, I got to go to the taping of Conan, which was great because the surprise guest was the cast of X-Men Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't really give us any new information except spending a lot of time talking about Olivia Munn getting looped up to fit into her Psylocke outfit. Peter Capaldi was also a surprise guest. He came on stage in his, in the TARDIS, which was pulled by strings.
Good.
And then they joked about the practical effects. And that was that. And then after that, I gotta go to it was supposed to be a swanky, do the red carpet for a swanky party for Geek Nation.
Okay.
Which ended up being a mess because they were, the PR company they hired was horrible and ended up botching the entire thing. So the people who were supposed to be there, like Christian Slater and Sophie Turner and Tara Reid, didn't show. And
there was going to be a Christian Slater, Tara Reid, Alone in the Dark reunion, and it didn't happen.
Ah. The only people who really did show was like half the cast of Teen Wolf and all six of the new Power Rangers, and the director of Sharknado 3. So I was like, "Oh, this was."
All you're doing is pitching me the fact that I need to see a movie involving the Power Rangers, Teen Wolf, directed by the director of Sharknado 3. That's the writer. I was going to say his name is Thunder. The writer's name is Thunder, which obviously makes more sense.
It makes a lot more sense.
Sharknado 3 had a nice presence at Comic-Con, by the way. They're in the streets.
They definitely did. Them and Damien.
They were making their play. I got a fun selfie with two like guys on stilts with sharks through their bodies, which was a lot of fun. Saturday for me was again in Hall H all day, and this was like Friday, like it's fun to get. I mean, nothing's really going to top Star Wars at this point, but Friday or Saturday certainly presented some challengers. It started off with the Warner Brothers panel. This was the big thing for many because Warner Brothers obviously has DC, and there's there's about 18,000 DC comic movies coming up them in the next few years. They start off Of course, though, with the Man from U.N.C.L.E. the other movie starring Superman, which it looks fine. Like, I'm little to say about the Man from U.N.C.L.E. He's on. Like, I like Guy Ritchie, and I hope it works out well for him. They also presented another film that, honestly, I'm not remembering from Warner Brothers right now. What was that movie?
Should have run your schedule, bro.
I should have run my schedule. I'm trying to think of, like, what was between this and then the madness that was all of the DC stuff? If I think of it, I'll think of it. But regardless, more exciting was seeing the first stuff from Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
Suicide Squad, I know there's been a lot of kind of, like, back and forth on what it's going to be in terms of, like, what it's going to look like and how it's going to be, just because you've seen pictures and some people really like the kind of...
leaked footage.
The leaked footage that they've been seeing of Jared Leto and Margot Robbie, and Will Smith and everybody, but, like, no one really knows what it's going to be, like, in terms of kind of stylistically and tonally and what have you. So David Ayer, writer-director David Ayer, who has done nothing but, like, L.A. cop films and whatnot, like Training Day and Sabotage, that's not L.A., but still, go with me on that one, Harsh Times. He comes out, and he certainly talks like a guy that writes and directs a lot of L.A. cop movies, Swearing Up a Storm or what have you. Has that kind of attitude that makes sense for him. But he then proceeded to bring out the entire cast of Suicide Squad, which of course included Will Smith and Margot Robbie and podcast favorite Jai Courtney, Joel Kinnaman, just everybody that's coming out there, except for Jared Leto. He's busy doing something.
Being sexy someone.
Okay. And then they debuted the first look at Suicide Squad. I was already on board with this just because it sounds so different than everything else. It's a movie consisting of DC villains.
Yeah.
And could be hardcore or not. The trailer, it's very dark. Like, I'm very curious how dark it's going to go, if it's going to be R-rated or not. I'm very curious about that. But regardless, just the way it's set up, it just looks unlike any other supervillain movie that I've seen. Yeah,
I mean, I think it might garner an R rating, and I kind of hope it does, because the kind of, you know, Marvel's a light and fluffy, DC is supposed to be the dark and gritty. Not supposed to be, but that's what they've sort of pigeonholed themselves as. And to do a story like this, where, you know, the leaked footage that was all over the internet was of Jared Leto slapping Margot Robbie, this film doesn't look like it's going to hold any punches or slaps. So this is something that I wanted to say. I wanted to be dark. I wanted to be gritty, and that was the I think it might actually be because of the trailer and because of the stuff that we have seen from it.
Yeah,
and because they don't have, you know, they're Warner Brothers. They don't have the Disney label hanging over their head that Deadpool had to fight with to get their R rating. Warner Brothers can just do an R film if they want.
Hopefully, even if it's not R rated, I still think it's gonna be dark.
Yeah.
That's for sure. That's the kind of the impression that I got, and I was just very impressed by it. I liked seeing the look of all these characters. Even got a brief look at Jared Leto's Joker, which is, you know, it's cool. Like, it's cool to see a new Joker. Curious to see how more of it plays out. But seeing, like, Harley Quinn and Deadshot and all these things, like, this is, like, and just the tone of the whole thing. And they had a very dark version of Bee Gees When I Told a Joke playing. I started a joke, which was interesting. It's just everything they did about it. Like, I'm happy to see that this is coming together in a way that I'm very happy with, in terms of seeing a different sort of movie.
A different superhero movie.
That still exists in this universe.
I mean, that's a little bit like how Ant-Man is. Ant-Man is a superhero film, but it's a heist film more than anything, but with a superhero.
Marvel in general, they've been trying to kind of make movies that fit into genres within the structure of a Marvel movie, where, like, Guardians is obviously a space opera. Captain America was this kind of spy thriller, like
Thor's
medieval fantasy. Like, so it's neat to see him kind of take these different steps. To back up a bit, for those that, you know, are really dedicated to having the full, like, accurate info, I found the Entertainment Weekly Dude Bro panel that I was calling it, The Brave New Warriors. It had Zachary Levy from Heroes Reborn, Sam Huigan from Outlander, Jordan Garvis from Orphan Black, Gavaris from Orphan Black, who is not British. I did not know this.
Really?
Kevin Durant from The Strain, Rob Kaczynski from The Frankenstein Code, and Michael Cudlitz from The Walking Dead. So there it was, just a bunch of male actors from various genre shows talking about things. The other thing I meant to point out, the Star Wars panel, what made it kind of extra, it stung a little for one person in particular. When you have 6,500 people exit from an entire room where another panel is supposed to follow it, you might feel a little bad about that. And that's certainly probably what Kevin Smith thought when he had his panel, his yearly panel, where he gets to basically talk about whatever he wants to for 2 hours, as everyone left it because of Star Wars.
I hadn't thought of that. Something that
he's made up, you know, a big...
He probably said, screw it, and went with them.
He probably wanted to.
That's what I would have done. I'd be like, cancel the panel. I'm going to this thing.
But no, he's staying. He does have his movie Yoga Hosers coming out. And the
Mallrats sequel.
The Mallrats sequel. I don't think he talked about it too much. I'm curious to watch. I like watching his panels because he can talk and it's fun to watch.
He was at the Scooby-Doo and Kiss thing. And
of course
I got to interview
he was.
Him.
He moderated? Wasn't he like the moderator?
He moderated it and he's also got a bit part in it. And Jason Mewes.
Okay.
So I got to interview the both of them. And if you are familiar with Kevin Smith, you will know that he likes to talk.
Exactly.
So, you know, they were trying to rush it along. And each of these interview things I'm at are like 2 hours, sometimes 2.5, because they need time for everybody to be able to talk to them. And they have a 2-question limit. Well, not with Kevin Smith.
No.
You have a 1-question limit, and then even then you're pushing it because he doesn't stop.
Yeah.
The PR people have to come in and be like, Kevin, come on, next person, come on, I gotta get through this.
So,
Which is good for me, because I get content, but, you know.
Yeah.
People down the line, not everybody gets to talk to Kevin Smith because he is so verbose.
So yeah, his entire, like, everyone that was there in that room left before his panel started. It did fill back up again. He was tweeting about it later, and everyone, you know, which makes, I mean, there's still a lot of people in line that want to see something in Hall H,
yeah,
so they still...
they just want to go into Hall H.
But it is a little, like, a movie, a series that he, you know, banked, has a lot of connection to in his career, suddenly was the cause of all of everyone not to be in his panel. So yeah, also backing up a bit, Warner Brothers, before Suicide Squad happened, Pan was the other movie I was trying to think of. Pan, there was a Pan panel. With the cast, which included Hugh Jackman, who's just a ball of charisma, and
he's so nice.
There's two people that know how to sell a movie. I'll get to the other one later, but the first is Hugh Jackman. He knows how to, like, regardless of how good the movie is or looks or what have you, he's the one that wants to promote everything that he does and make sure that you're excited about it, which is admirable. Like, he's come a long way since, you know, exactly 15 years ago when the first X-Men happened and he was, you know, the new kid on the block.
Mm-hmm. It was this whippersnapper.
Following Suicide Squad was Batman, Superman.
Yeah.
Colwyn, Dawn of Justice. The thing with, so with Warner Brothers, this is for the entire thing in Hall H, they, not only do they have, like, in Hall H there's a giant screen, there's a bunch of little mini screens, they also have, like, the walls that have screens on them as well, where they unfurl them, and the hall, like, there's suddenly, like, this 200-degree panoramic shot of walls of that you know, can be filled with images. So Warner Brothers knows how to use this to their advantage, and they certainly kind of set it up so you see all kinds of things wherever you're looking in the room. The main stuff still in, like, the center of the stage, but whatever, but just still, like, some, so when all this stuff happened, you're seeing, like, you know, like, two, like, various character posters and what on the sides of you while you're watching, like, the main stuff in front of you. Superman happened, and they had this whole elaborate intro for basically, like, every Justice League character, showing, like, a lot of concept art and whatnot for not only Batman and Superman, but Wonder Woman, Flash, Aquaman, Cyborg, and Green Lantern. Big reveal was that Green Lantern, that movie would be called Green Lantern Corp. So we'll have, I assume, multiple Green Lanterns. So at least in some form, I'll get my John Stewart.
I want to see Sinestro Corps. I want to see the Black Lanterns and the Orange Lanterns and all that.
If they're going through a core route, I'm sure that's probably going to be part of the plan.
Lovely. Yeah.
So, okay. So once the whole intro stuff was done, then Zack Snyder came out. He brought out everybody from here, so he brought out, first up was Holly Hunter, which I was like, oh, that's, I forgot she's in the movie, but that's cool. I was like, Holly Hunter's in Hall H right now, that's fun. She came out, then, you know, everybody, Henry Cavill, Ben Affleck, Gal Gadot, Jesse Eisenberg, Amy Adams, so they're all...
How is Jesse Eisenberg's hair?
He has hair again, not confirmed if it's a wig or not, but he has regular Jesse Eisenberg looking hair.
Boo.
So then they're talking about everything. Then they show the trailer for Batman, Superman, Dawn of Justice. Were you a fan of the first trailer? I haven't even seen this new one. Were you a fan of the first trailer?
I was. I'm always hesitant with trailers because they never, when they're that early, they don't have enough footage to fully be able to show.
It was a teaser. So yeah.
But I was. It made me excited. It
certainly indicates a certain tone.
Yeah.
This one's awesome. Like, I mean, I wasn't huge on Man of Steel. I like Zack Snyder in general. I haven't liked all of his films, like Over the Moon for him or anything, but there's a number of them that I do like quite a bit. But his style, regardless of how aggressive it can be, he can make a very beautiful movie. Like, you can pause most of the frames of his movies and get some good stuff. This movie looks definitely like a comic book movie in terms of seeing a bunch of capes running around, a lot of insane visuals that looks a lot more, it looks a lot more fun than Man of Steel does, honestly. Like, it looks like there's a lot more, even with the kind of the dark and grittiness that's become so stereotypically
DC
associated with DC and this kind of version of their DC films and properties. It still looks like, it looks fun. It looks like this, I don't know how a movie that has, you know, these two, along with Lex Luthor, along with Wonder Woman, probably, it's apparently Aquaman somewhere in there. I don't know how it's going to, I mean, it's because it's supposed to be like a pilot for Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what, if it's going to be like 3 hours or something to kind of incorporate all of this stuff.
After the credits, Nick Fury is just going to show up.
Nick Fury,
underwater,
yeah.
And, like,
yeah. Yeah. But this trailer, it really sold me on being excited for a movie like this as much as I already should be because it's Batman and Superman, a movie. And now I'm like, yeah, this is Batman. And the best thing about it for me was the beginning, where you see you get a glimpse of why this movie needs to exist, or at least has a justification for happening. Where Man of Steel ends with, you know, the giant destruction of Metropolis, this trailer begins with Bruce Wayne watching Superman destroy buildings and screaming in panic that one of his Wayne buildings with people in it are being destroyed right now. And he's like, he has this cool shot. You'll see it when you watch it, but it's right at the beginning. It has this cool shot of him. He's like on the phone and he's like looking up and he's seeing like this massive destruction happening. And he starts like yelling and it's like, you see this fury and like Affleck's selling it right now in this trailer. And he's like running into, like, there's a lot of 9/11 imagery, honestly. And you see him just like charging into this like dust cloud of a building collapsing. It's just really, it's just, wow. It gets you excited right there. And then you proceed to see 3 more minutes of just like these two existing in this world, and one, you get a brief glimpse of Wonder Woman, which is like, you haven't seen Wonder Woman before in a movie, so like that, like that's fun. And it's just, it was just a well done, like, put together thought of like, hey, here's what this movie is. They showed it again because Hall H begged for it to happen.
Yeah.
So like that was good stuff. You get everything you get to hear about from the different actors about what their excitement is for this kind of thing. I mean, the panel stuff, honestly, there wasn't any real big reveals or anything from this side of thing, and the panels was pretty boilerplate. Like, here's a question. Aisha Tyler was moderating this panel, and actually, she didn't do a great job.
She hosted the Critics' Choice Awards 1 year that I went, and she also did not do a good job
hosting
that either.
She's greatest
not
moderator.
A good host.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate, but regardless, yeah, Warner Brothers panel, you got to see a lot of stuff, which is cool. I mean, Suicide Squad,
you don't go to that for the moderator.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, Conan moderating Hunger Games was awesome, but he's not like a yearly moderator. And hey, Chris Hardwick's always fun. That's why they have him at most of the big panels.
I mean, that's his job.
Yeah,
in a nutshell.
So let's see. After all the Warner Brothers stuff, they then got into Sony and Screen Gems, who had Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Which is written by Seth Graham Smith, who also wrote Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. I was not a huge fan of that film. The book is a lot better.
Have you read Pride and Prejudice?
I've not read Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, but I've heard a lot of good things about that. Seeing the footage for it, though, I'm not very inspired by what this film's going to bring.
Well, I didn't really like the book. I read it, and it was, it felt uninspired. It just felt, I mean, I know this is the formula, but it felt like, oh, Mr. Darcy, and then, you know, Samurai Sword.
Yeah.
Like, it's just ham-fisted, and I imagine the film would be much like that.
Yeah, I wasn't digging it at all, and it didn't help. They had the moderator from Entertainment Weekly, who was terrible.
Mm.
He was just the worst.
I mean, like, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and then, you know, Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters, they're all things like, oh, yes, and the girls are trained in courtesy and manners and kung fu. It's like that kind of thing. At first, you're like, oh, but then it just wears off.
That's kind of what I got from the initial trailer. It's like, well, this is like a fun 5 minute skit, but
yeah,
then there's like
it's not a feature.
90 minutes of this. But that happened. Matt Smith was there.
Yeah,
like he plays one of the, and he had some of the
is
best.
He in Pride and Prejudice himself?
He's in Pride and Prejudice. Yeah, he's in both of these new Sony movies coming out. This next one too. But he had some of the best lines in the trailer that I saw. But yeah, I wasn't really
digging
it.
Is he Mr. Darcy?
No, he's not Mr. Darcy. Mr. Darcy is Sam Riley.
Huh. Who's Matt Smith?
Matt Smith plays someone else. one of the other guys that's going after the heart of Bennett, of Elizabeth Bennett. After the Pride and Prejudice one, though, they had Patient Zero, which looks like a riff on Day of the Dead and World War Z, in terms of like they're trying to, like, zombie outbreak happened and they're trying to find Patient Zero. They're trying to find so they can make a cure. But to do that, they're basically experimenting on zombies, which is where the Day of the Dead thing comes in. And this one stars Matt Smith as the kind of the guy who's, he's been bitten, but he's not infected. So he can kind of communicate with the zombies more, but the zombies also, they bring him into interrogation rooms and they can like try to talk to him or whatnot to kind of figure things out. One of them was played by Stanley Tucci. Seeing this trailer, that's where it suddenly got more interesting, but at the same time, I still just didn't really care.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm a huge, and you guys on the podcast should know that I'm a huge zombie fan. I love
zombie media.
I am also
a zombie fan.
But neither of these two things are doing it for me.
Yeah, I mean, you think that Sony would have gotten the hint that the zombie ship sailed. Like, everybody else seems to have gotten that hint.
I mean, even, like, I don't know about it, if it's sailed, but at least, dude, there's clever ways to do it, but even this is trying. Pride and Prejudice Zombies is, you know, pretty unique,
mm-hmm.
But it just doesn't look good. Like, that's my problem.
And, I mean, Patient Zero, I'll see it because it's got Matt Smith in it, but it doesn't sound like it's doing anything really cool or unique. Like, as many problems as there were with World War Z gave us something we hadn't seen before, and that was scale.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So what is this?
It was a disaster movie that just happened to use zombies as the impetus for a disaster, but it was very. I wouldn't say it's a perfect movie, but I was way more entertained by it than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Well, I loved World War Z. Yeah. I'm alone in my defense of that film, usually. But yeah, Patient Zero doesn't sound like it has anything
really new
to offer.
Not so far.
Except for Floppy-Haired Doctor.
And Stanley Tucci.
Yeah.
The next panel was the panel I was most excited for, and, you know, you're already getting a lot of superhero stuff, but that's all fun and games. But when Quentin Tarantino comes to Comic-Con, I get excited.
He was also supposed to be at that party.
Oh, okay.
Hanging out with Christian Slater.
Well, he was at the Hall H party, where we were having fun watching new stuff from The Hateful Eight for the first time. The Hateful Eight is his new Western... You can never say comedy or anything. It's just a Tarantino movie. It's his new Western Tarantino movie.
Yeah, that's a genre in it itself.
Yeah. It has Kurt Russell, Sam Jackson, Michael Madsen, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Walton Goggins, Bruce Dern. Just a collection of just of greatness. And even before he even came out, they had this... So he shot the film on 65mm cameras, which it's presented in Ultra Panavision 70. And he's very proud to present it that way, because Quentin Tarantino is obviously a big film guy. And he's made it in basically the largest film format possible, short of IMAX. He shot it on the actual cameras that they used to film Ben-Hur with, which was also shot in that format. And so even before Tarantino came out... Sam Jackson, who was not at Con, he appeared on screen to give basically a history lesson about both Ultra Panavision 70 and taking movies on the road. Hateful Eight is going to be taken basically on a road show for a limited time, for like 100 theaters. So you can kind of get that full 70mm experience. And so there's this whole, like, not tongue-in-cheek, because it was like, Sam Jackson, so it's inherently entertaining and fun to watch. He's giving a history lesson on what that means, where there used to be intermissions, and they used to kind of play a lot of things around the movie, not just the movie itself, along with Tarantino talking about just filming and using those kind of cameras and what he and his cinematographer, Robert Richardson, were, like, going through to kind of get a really real sweeping shots and what have you, and really kind of maximize the utilization of that formatting. Then, after that, Tarantino came out, and he teased us with 7 minutes of Hateful Eight that he edited just for Comic-Con. And I say teased us because Tarantino, like Kevin Smith, is a man who likes to talk. And so even though he announced that we're seeing 7 minutes of Hateful Eight, we still had to wait there and listen to Tarantino talk for a good long time before we actually got to 7 minutes. Of course, it was all worth it because Tarantino, he knows what he's talking about, so that's fun to listen to. And then we actually got the footage. Fantastic. I mean, Tarantino's the kind of guy. He does no wrong. Yeah. And for podcast listeners, and Mark Hoban, I know you already predicted that it will be my number one film of the year. I don't deny that that's probably going to happen when I see it this Christmas. Just because I love the things that he does. He does things that work for me in my film mind. But yeah, footage was fantastic. It's basically what serves as like an introduction to every single character in the film. And it's this very kind of, very similar to Reservoir Dogs in that it's a closed-off film. Like, there's very few locations besides one main setting, so it's a big talkie, but mm-hmm. it just happens to be set in a period Western setting with a lot of big mustaches and hats.
Yes.
Looks fantastic. Then the whole cast came out. Demi Bashir is another one I was trying to think of, who I call the Mexican Robert De Niro. They all came on stage. Kurt Russell doesn't have the big long hair, but he does have a big fat mustache, so that was fun to see. Actually, the footage, by the way, was edited to the score from The Thing by Ennio Morricone. And another big announcement that Tarantino made was that Tarantino does not use the original scores in his films. He's never had an original score. He always has diegetic soundtracks and just tracks that are playing over it. This is going to be the first one that has an original score, and it's going to be composed by Ennio Morricone, who is responsible for many spaghetti westerns. Of course, The Good, Bad, and the Ugly, Fistful of Dollars, Three Dollars More, what have you. This is his first Western score in 40 years, apparently, yeah. And Tarantino finally got him to provide, as opposed to just using tracks that he's used in Kill Bill and Django Unchained. Now he's actually going to get the man to score one of his films, which he probably has to be quite excited
about. Get somebody to score your Western.
That's a good one, yeah, for sure. So yeah, Hateful Eight panel. I was super excited about that, and I was very satisfied with everything I got to see. They even had, so on holidays you occasionally get like tickets and things that you can redeem in this kind of an area where you basically, in various panels, they give you special like tickets to redeem stuff later on. Hateful Eight was one of those panels, so I go up there and I got a movie card from Hateful Eight, which is cool. I got some stuff from Game of Thrones also and whatnot.
And they still do the, blah, blah, blah. Do they still do the giveaway in the hotel down next to the con?
Yeah, that's where, yeah. It's like, so it's in one of the hotels. They have like a whole room full of just like swag that's
yeah,
that you redeem.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Also, that's how big this thing is. Both hotels that are on either side of the convention center are also filled with Comic-Con stuff.
There's like an Xbox lounge, a Nintendo gaming lounge, all kinds of stuff. So after Hateful Eight, this day was incredible, packed, was Legendary Pictures. Which used to be with Warner Brothers, but now they're not with Warner Brothers anymore, now with Universal. So now they have their own, like, separate panel, which, you know, double the pleasure, double the fun, I guess. First up, they had Crimson Peak, Guillermo del Toro's new gothic horror film. Mm-hmm. They showed an extended preview from that. It's awesome. I don't need much more convincing to see Crimson Peak. I'm going to see it because it's
Guillermo del Toro. I heard Guillermo del Toro, Tom Hiddleston, I was in.
Yeah, Tom Hiddleston was there, Mia Wasikowska was there, and Jessica Chastain were there. A lot of fun to see Guillermo del Toro not use an F-bomb. It seemed like he was purposely restraining from doing so. I don't know why. There are other panels that are also dropping F-bombs, and Guillermo del Toro has the best accent ever, so if there's one person that I want to hear him drop F-bombs, it's Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah.
But regardless, saw a really cool preview. It really emphasized the scares. Like, it emphasized both it being this kind of romantic horror film,
mm-hmm.
as well as the fact that it has scares in it. Like, so I'm just super excited. And it's just so lush and lavish with its sets and the colors. Very, a lot of Italian influence in there.
Mm-hmm. And it's Guillermo's first, I guess, not Spanish period piece.
Yeah, for very, yeah, yeah. True. Yeah, so Devil's Backbone and Pan's Labyrinth. Yeah, this is the first American, or at least American acted, whatever.
No, they're British, aren't they?
British. Yeah,
Nima,
true.
Is Nima Wasikowska British?
Yes, Australian. But yeah, I guess Hollywood film.
Yeah.
I guess the way to put it.
English language.
Yes. But yeah, that comes out around Halloween in October. Next up was Krampus. Krampus is a new film from Michael Dougherty. Michael Dougherty, whose name you might not know, he directed the film Trick or Treat, which is a horror anthology film that is basically, it has this kind of cult following now because it didn't really get a theatrical release, was very limited, and it came out like way delayed, but it's really solid.
Mm-hmm.
Dougherty's also, he's friends of Bryan Singer. I think he has a co-writing credit on X2, I believe, and Superman Returns. He's from that kind of, that school of people he knows in Hawaii's and Hollywood. But Krampus is the story of the other character that people might know from associated with Christmas besides Santa Claus. There's Santa Claus.
Christmas
who's,
devil.
The Christmas devil, essentially, yes. And this is like, this one stars Adam Scott, Toni Collette, David Koechner. A lot of fun comedy people, and it looks like a mix of kind of like not Vacation, but like the kind of like a Christmas family movie kind of thing. That's all going to be very funny, but also has a lot of horror elements in it. And it just I was happy. I was very happy with
these
it.
Are both genres that we need more of. We need romantic horror. We need comedic horror.
Yeah.
You know, but like not parody, like not like Scary Movie, but actual films that are funny but also horrific because. The Krampus, if you're unfamiliar, is a goat-like demon who kidnaps bad children, puts them in bags, and beats them with reeds. And that's the kind of thing that is hard to take seriously because we have the idea of Santa, and like it would be difficult to do seriously. Like, oh, it's the Krampus, so you have to have a bit of comedy in there. And the fact that they're able to marry. Or it sounds like they're able to marry comedy and horror together is really what I'm excited for with this film.
Yeah, and it certainly looks very promising.
And the cast.
The cast is, I'm a big Adam Scott fan. I mean, the whole cast looks great, but I'm a big Adam Scott fan. So it's like, oh, cool, he's in Hall H right now talking about a movie. Like, look where he's gone.
I know, right? He's gone far.
Yeah. The last thing up for Legendary was the World of Warcraft movie, just called Warcraft. This is from Duncan Jones, director of Moon and Source Code. The movie's been This movie's had a presence in Comic-Con for like 3 years now.
Yeah.
And so it's finally coming closer to, you know, happening. It arrives in theaters next June. And so this had, for a movie that I honestly don't care that much about and the footage looked all right, like, it had the best opening because it had, so, like, there's, like, eight characters, like, four on the, or at least that were on the panel. It has four on the human side, four on the, was it orcs or whatever.
Horde
side. And so they had, like, individual character intros for each, and then their character poster would pop up, like, on the side screen. Legendary also did the cut. Full view side screen thing.
So they used to be on my Warner Brothers. They learned from
the best. Yeah, they learned from the best. So like the whole cast came out and everything, which has a lot of people. About, what's her name? Paula Patton, Dominic Cooper, Ben Foster, Toby Kebbell, the main guy from Vikings. I'm not sure. I can't think. It was Travis something.
Travis
Fimmel.
Something.
Travis
Fimmel.
So they got the whole cast came out and then they and talked about the movie and whatnot. And then they showed the footage. And honestly, I mean, there's two problems that I had with it. One is that, Duncan Jones tried to assure you that it's supposed to be a movie that's for fans, obviously, of the game, and then for people that just want to see a fantasy movie. That's fine. But I think my inherent interest in this, since I have no familiarity with the game besides, like, I know what this is and recognize various things from it, is that I'm curious to see how it balances showing two sides as opposed to just like one and then there's a bad guy. Like, I'm curious to see because the movie seems to want to focus on not just the humans but also the Horde and kind of show like why you should care about both teams essentially.
Yeah, and that's the problem with doing something like WoW because there are different groups. There's more than just humans and orcs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, neither one is inherently bad. Mm. I mean, the only thing I could think of is maybe the undead is the villain. And then the Horde and the humans and the orcs have to band together to defeat them. But even people play undead. Like, there's really no villain.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. I mean, if they'd done something like the other game, like Warcraft, the games, like Warcraft 3, that would make more sense. I'd be able to see how that would go. But something like WoW, which is a massive... Oh, that's redundant. An MMORPG.
It is called Warcraft, not World of Warcraft. So
yeah.
It is going more off of one of the Warcraft games and not the WoW experience. But I remember that it was like that was the initial thing I thought, right?
Yeah.
That it was a World of Warcraft adaptation.
That's what I thought as well. There's no
story.
So,
regardless, I mean,
WoW fans will be pleased.
WoW fans will be pleased, I'm sure, just to see something like that on the big screen. But honestly, the footage I saw, it looks good, but it just looks like the fanciest Blizzard cutscene I've seen yet. Like that's kind of the impression.
They've got some pretty fancy. Cutscenes.
They have amazing cutscenes, yeah. And this one just kind of looked like another one of those, just now with like professional actors in it. Also, I had no idea what was going on in this footage. Like, I get a sense of, like, hey, there's people that we'll care about when we know them more in the movie. But, like, I had no idea what this plot was.
Is it really insider? Like, you have to be a WoW fan to get it?
I just think it's just badly edited. Like, I honestly, I wasn't alone. I was with a lot of the people from other blogs and whatnot. And we just was like, some of us have familiarity with the game and some don't. But we're just sitting there thinking, so what is the story here? Like, I feel like a 5-minute sizzle reel should give me some indication of where this is going. And it just feels like, here are these people, and for some reason they're going to fight. And that's it. Like,
yeah.
And for the investment that Legendary seems to have in a movie like this, I'm hoping they clear up a lot by the time June 16th or whenever rolls around for them to put it together. Next up was one of the best panels of all of Comic-Con, which is a yearly thing at this point. It's also the one that people get up and don't pay attention to because it's called the Women Who Kick Ass panel, and it doesn't show anything new. It just shows women talking about things. That shouldn't be a bad thing, but many people deem it boring, but that's too bad for them. Up on this one, we had Gal Gadot, who's Wonder Woman, Gwendolyn Christie from Game of Thrones, Haley Atwell from Agent Carter, Jenna Coleman from Doctor Who, and Kathy Bates from American Horror Story. And the purpose of this panel was basically it's hosted by Entertainment Weekly, and it's just basically to kind of get a perspective of what it's like to be, you know, kind of heroic characters in various genre shows that are you know praised by fans or whatnot, what kind of struggles they have and have you, and it's just an insightful panel. Like it's always an interesting one to listen to because it's not focused on premiering anything or hyping you up or anything. It's just focused on listening to people talk about something and what their perspective is,
which is kind of what Comic-Con was for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, the panel when you go to a panel that's not Hall H or Ballroom 20, it's people standing around talking about the business. So there are people who premiere new things, but for the most part, it's like how to write female characters. It's how to self-publish. It's how to deal with copyright. It's how to find an artist. It's, you know, it's all these kind of things that are for people who are into both comics and the industry of comics. So this is definitely a throwback to what Comic-Con was in the beginning. And the fact that so many people don't care because they just want to see new footage is kind of depressing.
Mm-hmm. But, there, I mean, it gets a cheers. I'm glad that Comic-Con, that the programmers, they're thinking, like, we need to, like, put a lesson in, like, yeah, in between all this
but
stuff.
I really hope they don't think of it as filler, but if they do, at least it's there.
It's good filler, yeah, that's for sure. After that was the Joss Whedon apologizes begrudgingly about nothing panel. It's Dark Horse Presents an Afternoon of Joss Whedon. It's basically it felt like Joss Whedon just doing like a one man stand up show where he proceeds to kind of vent things. He did say that Comic-Con was his cure for Twitter. People may know that Joss Whedon did quit Twitter, no real reason specified, but probably because of the large amounts of harassment that he received for various unnecessary complaints about various characters in the latest Avengers movie.
You're talking about Black Widows?
Yeah, which he joked about.
What did he say?
He said, I thank you all for completely accepting Black Widow and having no problems with it whatsoever, that kind of thing. He got on stage. He had nothing really to announce. He said he's making a comic book called Twist, which is a Victorian-era Batman-like female superhero. That was the only real announcement made, but really he just kind of stood up there and just took questions from the crowd, and the crowd was very happy to ask him a whole bunch of questions, ranging them all over the place. He's Joss Whedon, so he's very, very self-deprecating or what have you. He's a fun guy to talk about things and
my very first con, I went to a Joss Whedon panel in one of the smaller rooms. And I had never seen him in person before then.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, so that's what Joss Whedon looks like. And then later on that day, I was looking at some figures, and I looked to my left, and Joss Whedon was looking at them, too, on the floor.
Nice.
And I was like, hey, I know who you are now.
Joss.
And he was like, it's me. And I was like, I saw your panel, you're great, and then he left. But that was my first celebrity sighting ever at Comic-Con, was Joss Whedon. And that was before Joss Whedon was Joss Whedon.
Hmm.
So it was still when he was just sort of nerdy.
Joss Whedon of Dollhouse.
Exactly. That was Joss Whedon at the time. Not Joss Whedon of Marvel and Avengers.
Speaking of Marvel Avengers, Marvel is not at Comic-Con this year.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if that made a difference for you for the kind of stuff that was revealed.
Not necessarily.
Is that why we have all this filler stuff to make up for Marvel not being there?
Well, I mean, I think the difference is basically what happened next, which is the Fox panel, because Fox also has a lot of Marvel properties that they're, you know, still getting ready to film. So basically, they took their slot. There wasn't, I mean, with Marvel not being there, it didn't feel like there was, I guess Friday, it felt like there wasn't too much there in between, because, you know, there's Star Wars and there's Game of Thrones and Walking Dead. Like, it felt like there's something there, like, that's a place where one of these panels from Saturday probably could have been put there, and then you could have put Marvel in this powerhouse day of Warner Brothers and Fox and then Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't there, and they're going to be at D23 of the Disney version of Comic-Con, essentially, later on in August. But with them not there, that did mean that Fox could take over and do what they wanted to do, which was show off all their superhero movies, and they, of course, have a few. But before they get to those, they still had to deal with the Scorch Trials. This is the sequel to The Maze Runner, which I actually liked more than I thought I would. And this trailer basically... they showed a new trailer, and they also showed a clip from the film, which looked very inspired by The Last of Us. There's, like, monsters in this new one. And the movie seems to, like, it seems to be going for more of a horror vibe this time around, which is interesting. But the monsters in it very much look like the clickers from Last of Us. They're making clicking sounds and everything. Given that director Wes Ball, I believe his name, he's from a kind of a special effects world, and he seems like a guy that's probably a gamer. I can see where he'd take influence from things like that, but that's definitely the impression I got. I can't say that I'm, like, over the moon for seeing new Maze Runner movies, but at the same time, I like the first one more than I thought I would, so hopefully this one delivers as well. I hope Littlefinger, Aidan Gillen, Carchetti from The Wire, he's in this film. It seems like he just, like, talks big and walks around corridors, so I'm excited to see that, I guess.
I mean, that's what he does in Game of Thrones.
Pretty much, yeah. But he more saunters in that. This one, he's, like, walking intensely. It's like a scene from The West Wing. So that happened. After that, then we get into some more more stuff. First up with this Fantastic Four panel. The show, again, there was no real surprises. Like, there was no, like Legendary I thought was going to have a surprise. Like, Legendary always has had surprises in their panels. Like, the last year they had the Skull Island announcement.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to make a movie about Skull Island, the origin King Kong story that we all knew we wanted.
Also starring Tom Hiddleston.
Yeah, I believe so. I feel like it's because J.K. Simmons and Michael Keaton dropped out of that film like a week before that's why suddenly they didn't have anything to do.
Yeah.
So that might have been why. But like the year before, the Skull Island one was like the Godzilla announcement. So they've always had something big. But this year, Legendary had nothing new to show. I mean, they had cool stuff and Warcraft, but nothing really like big. Fox, same way to an extent. I'll detail it right now. But I mean, besides the fact that it was great what they did show, they didn't really have anything surprising to drop. Like it was. Like, Channing Tatum came out at the end wearing a Gambit shirt, but, like, seeing, like, the first image of Gambit would have been something huge, but they didn't have that, so.
That was it. That was his costume.
That was his costume, yeah. He's just wearing a shirt that says Gambit on it.
Exactly.
But yeah, fantastic.
With a bad accent.
Yeah. So Fantastic Four happened, the cast came out and everything, and I keep wanting to support this movie because I really like Chronicle. That's all I have to go off this. And I mean, the trailers are it just looks like a generic superhero movie.
Yeah.
Like, I love the cast. I think there's four
I'm
great
very excited about the cast.
There's four great actors and Kate Mara. but I mean, Michael B. Jordan, Miles Teller, Jamie Bell.
Michael B.
Toby
Jordan
Kelly.
Is what I'm excited about. And yeah. I mean, it's a big deal because I want this to do well because I want this to set the precedence that we can have. Characters, we can have actors of color play characters that are white in the comics. So if this doesn't do well, I'm afraid that's
the problem because those same haters on the fact that this exists because how horrible something like this could have happened. If the movie's not good, it just fuels their fires. Like, you see,
yeah,
and this
and
is why.
And so this you better do well, Fox.
Yeah. So I mean, I hope this works out, but we'll find out after this. Deadpool happened.
So the
thing started up with Ryan Reynolds doing a video intro in the Deadpool costume, fully flying with the F-bombs and everything.
And
saying from the studio that had the greatest idea of sewing my mouth shut for the first time. So Ryan Reynolds comes out, he's on stage, he's having a ball talking to us. Then the whole cast comes out, and then they show the footage from Deadpool. It looked insane. Like, it's super R-rated. You know, people getting shot and cut up and all kinds of swearing and whatnot. It looks like it captures the complete spirit of Deadpool.
Yeah, it's pretty dead on. I'm a huge Deadpool fan.
Mm-hmm.
Last year I was able to round out my collection with New Mutants 98. Very excited about that. And that book is going for like $600, $700 now. Mm. So, just because, here's the hint. If you hear a movie's coming out, by the first appearance of that character in the comic book form, because it will only go up in price. The trailer looks spot on. It's extremely R-rated. There's cursing in it. There's all kinds of jokes and humor. And the thing with the trailer, though, is like half of it is that quote-unquote leaked footage we saw last year. So it's not all new, but the quips, the jokes and Ryan Reynolds. And I'm not a Ryan Reynolds fan.
Me either. I'm not a huge Ryan Reynolds fan.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't really like the guy. He's a nice guy in person. But as far as his previous roles,
it's pretty
I'm
mixed.
Yeah. But this, I was on board since he wanted to do it, since the beginning when he wanted to do it, because he was passionate and because I thought he could do it, and it looks like he can.
I mean, from one of the, and I'm not a huge hater on X-Men Origins Wolverine. I like it more than most people, I think, but I don't love it. But it's still like the weakest X-Men movie. But at the same time, he is a highlight in that early part where he's talking like a Deadpool would talk.
Yeah.
And so I don't know why they decided we need less of this and they decided to show his mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
But now that they have a whole movie where they're like, let's do this.
Yeah.
Good. Like, it looks good.
I mean, there is some origin stuff in that trailer that I mm-hmm. don't quite know what they're going to do with it. Like the whole, they have a quote in the trailer where they say, you'll lose your sense of humor in here, or your sense of humor will die in here, implying that he had it beforehand and not that he goes insane from the process and therefore gets a sense of humor. So we'll see a little bit of pre-Deadpool Wade, see what he looks like beforehand, as I'm interested to see what they're going to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's finally, guys, it's a superhero movie with an origin story we haven't seen five times in five other films. So this is pretty exciting.
The Batman Superman trailer manages to even sneak in a shot of Bruce Wayne's parents getting killed.
Oh my gosh. Wait, that's how Batman became Batman? His parents were killed?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
I know. It's
wait,
a new
so
one.
How does the Fantastic Four become their powers? Is it like a rock or something?
Their parents are also shot.
What? Okay. Oh my god.
But yeah, so the Deadpool footage, which they immediately showed again, because Hall H was begging for that to happen, they did that. So that happened. That was cool. Then Hugh Jackman comes back out, because, you know, he's Hugh Jackman.
He's Hugh Jackman.
And he basically provides an intro to this. So they play this like audition reel footage from the first X-Men, mm-hmm. and then they show this kind of montage of all the X-Men movies together, all of your favorites: Last Stand, Origins, Wolverine, whatnot, and the others.
Way to name the best ones from the series.
I always go with the best to last. That's what I do. And then Wolverine's getting all emotional. Hugh Jackman's getting all emotional because it's his last time playing Wolverine. They show this teaser image of him as what looks like Old Man Logan, which is cool. Like, if that's going to be the plot for the next Wolverine movie.
Did he have bone claws?
No, he had a claw because I don't know how things happen in this universe anymore. That's kind of why I was a little disappointed with Days of Future Past, because like, we're just kind of throwing stuff in and not explaining it. But regardless, he did that. Then Bryan Singer came out, and he's gay. We already know that.
What?
Okay. But he came out again. He came out on the stage, and he and Hugh Jackman. I was going to say
you can
Logan
just
first.
Call him Wolverine. He is Wolverine. Nobody else can ever play
that
role.
In Australia's Hugh Jackman, we're hanging out on stage, palling around. Then they bring out the entire cast of X-Men Apocalypse, which is a lot of people that I cannot name right now. But Oscar Isaac was back out again. I like Oscar Isaac, so I'll just mention his name because he plays Apocalypse.
You can name him. There's Olivia Munn, and there's James McAvoy, and Michael Fassbender, and that guy who plays Quicksilver, all the fangirls like.
I forgot the thing at the Fox panel because it was the most forgettable thing, even though it had the most enjoyable panel. Victor Frankenstein. This is a movie with James McAvoy and Daniel Radcliffe, a very hairy Daniel Radcliffe. After Harry Potter, he became just hairy.
Yeah.
So McAvoy plays Frankenstein, Daniel Radcliffe plays Igor, and this movie looks terrible, honestly. It looks god awful. It looks so bad. It's from Paul McGowan, who I believe did he's done like Lucky Number 7, and he did the first episode of Sherlock, or maybe a couple of episodes of Sherlock. But like, he's a director that's pretty hit or miss. He did Push with Chris Evans too, if you remember that one, which I saw in Hall H years ago. That's a movie that's happening. But their panel, James McAvoy and Daniel Radcliffe, were having a ball making a lot of sexual innuendos. They really wanted to capture that kind of Sherlock Watson dynamic, actually, mm-hmm. it seems, from the current BBC Sherlock.
Or Frankenstein Igor.
With Frankenstein Igor, yeah. But that movie looks, that's why I forgot it, because the movie looks terrible. But anyway, I mentioned that because James McAvoy was at that panel and he's wearing a hat.
He didn't take the hat off?
And he had his hat on for that panel, but then he came out for X-Men and he didn't have his hat on.
Oh, okay.
So you can see that James McAvoy is currently going bald for to play Xavier this time
Charles.
Around. Charles. Everyone came out. Jennifer Lawrence came out as well. She's Mystique and everything. Michael Fassbender. Mm-hmm. Fassbender. Yay. And the whole cast came out.
And said nothing, no.
Yeah, pretty much. They're just kind of tricky because there's so many of them and they have so little time. So they're just kind of going down the lines like, what's it like? Do this. You're Angel now. You're Storm now. You're Cyclops now. All that stuff. Then they showed the footage from they've only been shooting for 5 weeks, mm-hmm. but they showed what they had, which is basically to get the tone down to show you what that's going to be like. And I hate to reflect too much on a sizzle reel of 3 minutes of footage that's well far from like effects and whatnot, but there's certainly, they're going with Apocalypse, who is such a incredible force as far as mutants go and villains are concerned. It's a really neat direction to take it, and I'm very happy to see something like this, which doesn't seem to involve like Magneto lifting something heavy as a climax, mm-hmm. or Wolverine coming to save the day. This looks like it fits within the X-Men universe, but it's
they actually need the X-Men to solve it. They need everybody together.
It's set 10 years after Days of Future Past, the past portion of that, so it's in the 80s, and Oscar Isaac's Apocalypse,
which explains the costumes.
Yeah, and it's now at a time since they changed the timeline around. It's now at a time where the mutants are being accepted. I mean, there's still strife and whatnot, but it's certainly a far cry different from the universe that you saw in the first X-Men film, where they're persecuting mutants. This time, it's kind of like they're around and people know it.
We're to assume that this is the Apocalypse is the event that makes them hated again in time for the first X-Men.
Fit
the timeline.
I'm very curious what time. I'm not a big fan of the time travel aspects of this X-Men series. In the continuity, they don't seem to be.
They don't seem to care.
They don't seem to care, as opposed to the Fast and Furious, which is like bent over backwards to make sure everything fits in that mm-hmm. universe. Well, such a weird, franchise to kind of call to in terms of which ones has the better series continuity. But X-Men really doesn't seem to care too much. They're playing pretty fast and loose. Regardless, it looked cool. Mm-hmm. The characters are all there. Magneto dropped enough bomb, which made me laugh. And you get to see a shot of Xavier with his bald head.
What?
You see some Psylocke. You see Apocalypse, obviously. You see the new cat. You see the new Cyclops, Storm, and Jean Grey. You know, just cool stuff to see from X-Men. Mm. And then the last thing that happened in there, the all of the Fox superheroes came out. So all the Fantastic Four, X-Men, and the Deadpool cast all came out stage to get the largest selfie ever from a superhero cast.
Did they have a really long selfie stick?
No, Stan Lee came out and did it.
was he a foot in front? And did
So Stan Lee came out to take
the
picture.
They should have had a giant selfie stick.
And that's when Channing Tatum surprised everyone by coming out also. And they're like, hey, it's me, Channing Tatum, I'm filming Gambit. And they showed all the logos of the different films, including the Gambit logo. So, yeah, all that happened. So that was Hall H on Friday. on Saturday. It was a long day. Very tiring. I actually did get to see the X-Men Days of Future Past Rogue Cut as well following this, since I was in the X-Men mood. And this is, of course, the 17-minute longer version of DOFP, which has all the scenes from Rogue that you were desperately clinging on to that you didn't get to see the first time around. It's fine. I was mild on Days of Future Past as it is, so this is not better, not worse. Just like, oh, it's a different version.
I know that Hugh Jackman and Wolverine is the big moneymaker, but we had a chance for a female-led story that is female-led in the comics, and they completely butcher both her and her powers and her role. I'm talking about Kitty Pryde, if you don't know. Kitty Pryde is the one who actually went into the past to do everything Wolverine did, and to just make her the conduit for Wolverine going to the past. But that's not her power. She does not have brain time travel powers.
I mean, I was impressed with how he wasn't the one that saved the day, ultimately, in this film. And he wasn't, he was more of a catalyst to get you to go back. I think they did a good job of, you don't need to go back in a day's future past.
Yeah.
I was happy with some aspects of it. Others, I was like, continuity. So it was, I'm stickling on this too hard, but whatever.
I mean, I'm down for changing powers with the story. That's, you're right, but... Come on, we could have had a female-led film. And then time when everybody's complaining about the lack of women in this superhero genre thing that's happening with films now. So...
Well, this next one, it seems like a lot of people in there. So
there's a lot of women in this one. I'm excited about that.
That's...
What'd you do Sunday?
Sunday, I walked around. Sunday, I got a chance to walk around
buy
the floor, buy some stuff, buy some cool things for myself and my lovely girlfriend. Takes a lot of pictures.
My Sunday was busy again because for some reason all of CW and FX press was that day.
Yeah, well, they had their panels were at Hall H.
That's
that
true.
Day. So Hall H on Sunday is generally not very.
No.
It's cool for people that are fans of, like, Supernatural is like a huge thing there and whatnot. But it's not like the giant comic book movies. It's more of the TV stuff that people are obviously big fans of. But FX is there too. If, The Strain was there, so Guillermo del Toro was back and.
So my day was spent, my first panel, not my first panel, my first press event was Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll.
The new Dennis Leary show.
With Dennis Leary, who was fantastic.
I'm excited for this. I'm a huge Rescue Me fan.
Excuse me.
So.
And he was very charming. And they also, we only had like an hour and a half with him. They ended up running late. But Dennis Leary did reveal some very, spoilers, some information that we weren't supposed to get until later, but he's Dennis Leary, so he can say what he wants.
He's in the next Batman Superman.
He's Joker.
Yeah, okay.
But he revealed some of the musical guests that they'll be getting.
Oh.
So apparently they tapped a lot into actual musicians to bring onto the show.
Mm-hmm.
So they were going to get Joan Jett and David Bowie.
Okay, so like 80s and punk.
Yeah, it's some very inspiring, I think he said Keith Richards.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks fantastic. And talking to them about it, you could see how passionate they were. You learned some really cool things about them. Like, the cast had to learn to... people who didn't already know how to play instruments had to learn how to play instruments. And, so then you saw some footage of them, drumming and stuff. And then after that, I hung around and went to the Strain...
Yeah.
Press event. And I got to talk to everybody, including the actor who plays Walder Frey, the most hated man in Westeros. And
he's the most likable man on the Strain.
He is. Exactly. And he's also the most hated man at Hogwarts. And he's very sweet. He talks a lot. Like, his handler was trying to get him to wrap up so he could go to the next table for the round table. And he just wouldn't stop talking. He wanted to tell stories about working with Guillermo and all that kind of stuff. And I asked him what it was like to be one of the most hated men in, geeky pop culture. And he's Doctor Who. He was also a horrible person in an episode of Doctor Who.
Oh, good. Okay.
So he got the nerd trifecta there. And he's like, I love it. It means I'm doing something right. But he likes this character being nice. Got to talk to Corey Stoll, the dad from Jumanji, who everybody would recognize his face immediately.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Jonathan Hyde?
Yes.
There we go.
He is very sweet. Mm-hmm. He's also the Egyptologist in The Mummy.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's very 90s guy. Told him he was the stern face of my childhood in cinema. And a couple other stars, Corey Stoll, again, who has hair in this. So he looks completely unrecognizable.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for him to lose that hair.
I mean, he doesn't have it in Ant-Man.
I mean, in The Strain.
That's going to happen. He's going to be stressed. He's just going
to
go, rip it out.
Because that wig is his own character on that show.
Yes, Guillermo did not show up because he's a butthead.
He didn't show up to
the He did not show up to the press event. I was so upset because he was the one I wanted to talk to. He's the reason I chose to go to The Strain.
Was he at the panel or something?
He went to the panel after.
Okay.
Okay.
He introduced this episode.
But yeah, so that was cool. Got some good footage and photos of all of them. And then I was able to wander for the last hour. At that point, I only had an hour left, and I picked up a couple last exclusives. I think one of the coolest things I got was Judge Fish. If you're a fan of the Judge Dredd comic book, mm-hmm. you'll know who Judge Fish is. The Gentle Giant Deadpool figure, mostly on the last day. My goal for Comic-Con this year was to find a particular comic book. Golden Age, Detective Comics 233. And let me tell you, I am so disappointed at the fact that there are not many comic books at Comic-Con. It is so hard
like
to find comics.
Of a vintage quality, I guess?
Oh, just comics in general. There's this tiny section that's maybe three, four rows long that has comic books in a place that has 20 rows.
It is massive, yes.
It is mostly movies. It is mostly, you know, they have places for the artists. They give places for creators, for people who are just selling stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And all that's fine, but if you actually want to buy comics, it's not the best place for it, ironically, anymore. And that's because a lot of people who do sell Golden Age, Silver Age, Bronze Age, are the collectors, or people who just sell modern or back issues,
mm-hmm.
can't afford to have booth there anymore. And it's kind of depressing, because I wanted to find this rare book, and I figured, where can I find this rare book? The biggest comic event in the country, mm-hmm. in the world.
Yeah.
And I heard of two in the entire place. There was a 2.0 that they wanted way too much for, and then another one that somebody else had bought, apparently, that same day. So, get your shit together, Comic-Con. More comic books at Comic-Con!
Well, so wrapping up, then.
Yes.
We're talking a while. We had a question from one of our constant, one of our listeners, who is always contributing on our Out Now feedback. He asked, who do you think won Comic-Con? I feel like a default answer is Star Wars. I want to go away from Star Wars because they treated fans with just all kinds of like fun by having a concert for them. Who do you think won Comic-Con?
Well, I mean, I probably would have gone with Star Wars too. But you go first. I'm gonna think.
I would like to probably say Gwendolyn Christie. I think she's in enough like properties between Game of Thrones and Star Wars.
Yeah,
where she's become like. For, you know, being this super awkwardly tall woman who's now transcended various genre properties and is beloved by many fans all over the place. She's you know, a very likable persona and whatnot. She's certainly doing what she needs to do to kind of keep the fans on her side and have fun being an actress that gets, you know, a large amount of exposure.
Yeah.
And Deadpool. I mean,
Deadpool's what everybody was looking forward to. It's mm-hmm. what I was most looking for. Most of the stuff I bought was Deadpool-related.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Guillermo?
Yeah, Guillermo's always a fun presence.
He was beloved on the Simpsons panel. He was hilarious on that.
He's on the Simpsons panel?
Yeah.
Okay.
Apparently he said that somebody asked him who would he be, what character would he be on the Simpsons? He'd be Bumblebee's brother. So he was very, very funny. And then he had The Strain, and then he had Crimson Peak. So I think maybe if it's not Gwendolyn Christie or Star Wars, it's who is also counts as part of Star Wars, I'd say Guillermo.
Okay. All right. Well, so wrapping up then, that was Comic-Con. That was our recap of this year's events at the 2015 San Diego Comic-Con.
Woo!
Lots of good fun there. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Brenna, where can people find you online?
I am at randhollywood.com/Brenna-Smith, author/Brenna-Smith. I'm also on Twitter at BatBrenna. I am also on Facebook as Brenna Smith. And I think that is all the places that I am at on the internet.
You can find, you know, where you can find all my work, thecodeofzeke.com, Rant Hollywood, and at Aaron's PS4. That's this week's bonus episode of Out Now with Aaron and Abe. Next week we have our 200th episode spectacular. We'll talk about Ant-Man, Trainwreck, and the Trainwreck that's been our podcast for 200 episodes. And until that time, that's going to do it. So long and goodbye.